Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Rebel Room post-game edition. Ryan Green, Christine Killemeyer, Rob Misch here to discuss UNLV's thrilling 88-75 victory over rival Nevada Reno tonight at the Thomas and Mack Center. And thrilling it was. For it didn't look like it was going to be for a while, as a lot of foul calls marred the early ongoing of this one. It was a little slow to get going. UNLV found itself down 12 with about 15 minutes to go, and then I don't know about you guys, but I've never seen a game turn on a dime quite like that one did, with UNLV just going from 0 to 60 in about 3-4 possessions. Hell, in one timeout.
And with two rookies and a walk-on.
Talk about a motley crew.
My God, my lead in my story was Kruger should have been at a roulette wheel picking numbers, and he should have been in some casino hitting 17 tonight, because that was a savvy move.
A lucky gamble.
And you know what? I bet in a moment of complete and honest truth, he would probably say he was even a little surprised by how well that worked out. I think he knew what he was going to get energy-wise and all that, but, I mean, geez, to spark a run like you mentioned, the freshman Anthony Johnson or Anthony Marshall, Justin Hawkins, and then the walk-on Steve Chopper Jones to do what they did, there couldn't be one person in that arena who wasn't surprised.
I mean, early in a season, though, you got to think getting different matchups and getting guys a feel for how guys are going to work together on a floor really is a crapshoot if we're going to keep this gambling thing going. And it just, that gamble paid off. Like, man, did that group work out well?
Yeah, and it just so happened that, I mean, you're going to do that early in the season. It just so happened the UNR game comes early in the season.
Right.
So, you know, he's trying to find numbers and combos and, you know, chemistry. But who would have guessed? I mean, 54-42 down. Next thing you know, they got a 23-4 run. Marshall Hawkins provide 12 of those points. And Chopper's knuckleballing in a three.
It was beautiful, though. And, man, did it get that crowd going. That was fabulous. That was a good atmosphere for once. I was really nervous at early, like 5 minutes before tip off. Besides the student section,
there weren't a lot of
that
people
was
there.
An empty arena.
Well,
it just
weeknights.
It filled really fast
and got loud. And I mean, granted, the play of those guys definitely helped with that.
I thought there was more than 13,000. It sounded louder than Saturday's crowd of 14,300. But you know, that's what happens when they get going. They sound like, you know, every one person sounds like two.
I was gonna guess about 14,000-15,000 a night, and you know, I'll tell you, for a Wednesday night early in the season, what an atmosphere! And I think that's a telling sign for the excitement that people have over this team. I mean, that was a great atmosphere tonight.
Well, you know, Luke Babbitt said that when they were up 12. They had him where they wanted him. And he wasn't just talking about the players. They had the crowd where they wanted him. And, you know, we've all seen our share of basketball games, and that happens. And he just rolled his eyes. He goes, you know, once that roll started, he knew it was over. Because the crowd got into it, and it snowballed.
And with a run like that coming so late in the game, if that run had come in the first half, there is the hope of, you know, being able to overcome it. You know, you get the halftime, you get the break, you get the momentum slowed down. But, it, you know, midway through the second half, you can't.
Well, and you know what? To give them credit, they tried. You know, they had a few free throws. They had a couple shots. They were within 6 points. So then it became, well, once Kruger put the first stringers back in, would they fritter away that inheritance? And they didn't.
And, you know,
Chase hit a three-pointer, and
there
were some big buckets,
it.
And they ran away. Yeah,
and they even call, you know, give Reno some credit too. They call the timeout with, I think, about 12:55 left, knowing that you're going to get this full timeout. You're going to come back out for a minute. You're going to get a TV timeout. That was the chance to kind of take the crowd back out of it by getting them sitting on their hands for about 10 minutes. And
Kendall Walls hits a big three.
His only attempt, they did a real good job of
shadowing him.
They did a great job defending him. They did some really good scouting. But then the one time he's open in the left corner, bam. You know, they took advantage of it. Kind of stunning. But you know what? What you and I couldn't figure in is the fact that Chopper Jones has 7, maybe 8 gears.
That
12,
kid,
15 gauge bike.
Was
one
it,
of those
would,
little, would, on the handlebars. The little,
he just kept cranking
the switches.
It,
yeah.
A baseball card in there.
Yeah, there you go.
And you know, it's funny because, you know, walk-ons in college go an entire career dreaming of having one night like that, and a lot of them never get it. And you know, he said after the game that was the best moment. He said besides, he said maybe right alongside with winning a high school state championship when he was in Portland. He said that was the best moment he's ever had on a basketball court when he hit that three. The timeout comes and he's just there, you know, in that run. That timeout comes and he was the one getting the chest bumps instead of giving them off the end of the bench.
You talked to him extensively, and we have a feature on him just exclusively, too, on good old Chopper Jones. What else did he say?
You know, the funny thing I wanted to ask him about was the defense he did on Luke Babbitt, because he found himself matched up with the 6'9 big man, and I asked him, I said, you know, I saw you throwing your forearm in his back a little bit, and he said, you know, I have my dirty tricks. I'm not going to really talk about them, but, you know, he had to pull every one of them out of the bag, and, you know, collectively, the defensive effort on Babbitt for the second year in a row.
Two of 11. Yeah,
completely
impressive.
Took him out of his flow. 2 of 11. He had 14 and 10, but, you know, they made him really work for it. Just like last year, he had a lot of points, but really had to work for it. Couldn't shoot. And
14, I really don't think was that impressive for him, considering 10 of those points all came from the free throw line, and that was mostly courtesy of your buddy, Dave Hall.
Oh. I thought we could get through this whole broadcast without mentioning
this.
You know what? About 2 minutes into the game, I noticed there were a ton of whistles, and as soon as Trevon went out, I said, "Boy, is Dave Hall calling this game?"
Exactly. And then you look. Right, I know.
And I had just gotten the echo of the whistles out of my noggin from Saturday night. Were you there Saturday night?
No, I was at the fight.
Did you hear about it?
No.
80 free throws, was it?
52 free throws for UNLV, a school record.
Wow.
80 that's total. That's incredible.
A lot of game stoppage.
What's that? I can't hear you.
Tweet. Well, tweet. I speak in the language you know.
Yes.
Tweet.
50, Rock 50, and Robin. Tweet.
57 free throws tonight, 45 fouls. But despite all of that, 162 points on the board at the end of the night. And, you know, I mean,
35 of them off the bench for the Rebels.
And they had some decisive stat leads over here.
And boy, that, I mean, we really can't talk enough about how well that gamble paid off for Kruger, because he really, you know, I am betting that maybe he thought that lineup would be in there for a couple minutes, and they wound up just taking control of the game.
Just a minute.
Justin Hawkins, every trip down the floor, taking it to the basket. Anthony Marshall doing the same. You know, you mentioned Jones. Oscar Belfield was really the only starter who was good offensively from start to finish.
You know what? We can't finish this without really hammering the fact that Oscar Belfield was the rudder tonight. And, you know, they can probably count on him for this pretty regularly now. 22 points, he played 32 minutes, and some slick, savvy passes. And he really likes taking it to the hole on just about anybody.
Don't let those braces fool you. He has grown. He has matured as a player. I mean, you can see it in just the few games that they've played in this young season that he really is stepping up to take on that leadership role and really become one of the more vocal, experienced guys on the team.
Absolutely. 8 for 12 from the field, 6 of 7 at the line. He had 3 boards, 4 assists, 1 turnover. I mean, scintillating.
And only 7 turnovers as a team. For as choppy as that game was, they
choppy?
Yeah, they
for a chopper.
They didn't give possessions away. They got their shots up. I mean, they took 75 shots in this game. Well, so they got their looks in.
7 turnovers right there. That is a Lon Kruger stamp right there. You take care of the ball, and you know, we're gonna have to follow up with him just exactly what he thought he'd get from that.
I would love to hear him just in a complete, because you know you might not get it, but I would just love to hear him be just completely, you know, get a few beers in him and loosen him up and just get him to be honest about it.
Well, especially once he's had the time to like decompress from the game, really sit and think about it and really just be like, is that really the combination that I put into that game? And was that really what won it for us?
Yeah.
And it was.
You know,
Rob, you said it best, too, when we met up post-game, and you said, that is why I could never be a college basketball coach.
No, my career would last 1.5 games.
I would have never thought to do it.
Never. Never. There's so many aspects of the game would just they'd crush me. They would. I couldn't handle it. There's no way I could handle that seat. And, you know, some of the moves, that's why he's been in the game for so long, obviously. Yeah. He's got a great feel, a great touch. Saturday night, who do you think was the sixth man? Who was the first guy off the bench that he tapped? 3 minutes into the game, there's Chopper Jones. Mm-hmm. You don't think some people are scratching their heads? Nothing against Chopper, but you know who said something funny tonight? Justin Hawkins. You talk about some young guys who act like veterans, talk like veterans, think like veterans. That's what I threw to Justin, you know, scratching my head. Boy, look at the walk-on. Justin stopped me in my tracks and said, no, he's not a walk-on. He's a basketball player. Look what walk-ons have done at this school. Look at Rene Rougeau. Mm-hmm. He's a ball player, and he pushes us. We push him. We're all a team. We're a family. We're deep, and we're just going to get after it.
I think people really start. This game especially is proving just how deep this Rebel team can be and how much potential there is. And I think that was a lot of what was missing from last year's team, is that you really couldn't go that deep into the bench before you're grasping at straws.
And just look at the starters, too, the one-dimensional aspect of so many starters. Look, you know what, Christine, and I didn't do it, but I'm going to look back at my notes and look at just how many different Rebels brought the ball up the court tonight.
Mm-hmm. See, like, you could go back and look at all my game video, and it's every single time. First it was Jasper, then it was Anthony, and then it was Justin, and then it was Oscar, and then Trayvon, and then, you know.
How are you going to defend that?
You don't know. It's like, I mean, as long as Darius Santini isn't bringing the ball up, I think Basama is bringing the ball up.
Although Santini can bring the ball
up. He can. Okay, well, Basama shouldn't bring the ball up.
We'll get to the big man.
But, you know, and Derek Jasper in there, I mean, even you talk about the starters, what we were wondering if they were, what they were going to do with that suddenly inherited lead. And, I mean, they talk about feeding off the energy, too, and I think Jones had a lot to do with that, too, and he put the starters back in, and I think at that point Kruger knew what he was going to get from him.
Absolutely.
You know, he put Jasper and Stan back and Willis back in there, and I think he could be pretty confident that they weren't going to mess it up.
No.
You know what's uncanny about the game? Until he put those guys in, the fantastic trio, I counted them. They had at least 12 very close misses.
Mm.
I mean, UNLV could have hit 100 points easily.
Oh, easily.
But it was funny, you know, they put those three guys in, they start generating energy, getting buckets, and then the starters go back in, and all of a sudden, guess what? Everybody's hitting those close shots.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny how that's contagious.
Oh, yeah. Shooting is definitely contagious. I mean, you can pass bad shooting from one teammate to another, but you can also pass the good shooting. You just kind of get into the flow of the game, get that touch for the ball, you just kind of relax a little bit, and it's like we saw at the start of the game. I think it was one of those where it's, oh, okay, we're not hitting shots. Game keeps going on, tensing up more and more and more, and overthinking it. You get a lead, you get comfortable. All right, this is fun. We're just having fun. We're just playing ball. You loosen up a little. You don't try as hard. You make those buckets fall.
Yep.
You don't think
you get
as
out.
Much,
you get out of your head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly. And it certainly happened at the end of the night. UNLV made up for that poor early shooting. They shot 44% for the game. You know, pretty good, pretty respectable percentage.
A gross 14% from beyond the arc of that first half. That was nasty.
And three of eight from three in the second half. So, I mean, they turned what could have been a pretty ugly early season night, where a lot of people are questioning a lot of things, into something that, you know, I thought, a little over a year of sitting in the Thomas and Mack and watching basketball, is probably one of the more entertaining games.
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely.
At the end of the night, I think anybody who showed up probably got their money's worth, because it was a fun night of basketball to watch.
Yep.
Really.
Absolutely.
It's nice to know that at least the basketball team can beat Reno.
Hey, let's go to the big man. Let's go to the big man. I think they've got some low post production this season, huh?
Yeah,
The season opener, they combined for 20 and 11 tonight.
It was a quiet 20, but it served its purpose.
Tonight was 16 points, 15 boards. Matt Shaw said, you know what, we're going to be a three-headed monster. If someone's not doing it, another guy gets in there. And between the three of them, you know, someone will be hot, someone will be active, and, you know, looks like it's going to work.
And you talk about contagious. You know, one of the quieter guys on this team, Darius Santee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, shoot, look at that one instance he had in the second half where he misses the baseline jumper, chases it down, and then flies back in for
falls to the ground, gets up, hustles down the court on defense. It's
contagious.
Seeing that firepower come out of him, he's a quieter guy, kind of, you know, more reserved. Being able to see a little bit of a spark come out of him really is great, and I hope we get to see more of that as the season progresses.
Yeah, a lot of that goes to Lou Hill, the assistant coach who works with the big men, and, I mean, he's trying to light a fire in those guys every day. And but you know what? They're trying to light a fire under all of them, the guards, everybody, and, you know, talk. You hear that a lot all the time. Talk more, and you know who the one guy is that talks the most that gets the others to talk. Chopper. Everything comes back to Chopper.
I don't think this is just going to be a fluke. Seeing, I mean, I'm not saying we're going to see him for 20 minutes a game, but I mean, I think this guy, it's starting to look like he's going to be a resident 8 to 10 minute a game guy.
At least.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
He's that heartbeat of the team. Like, the guy that doesn't necessarily, you know, always get the playing time, but will always go out there and give it everything he has and teammates pick up on that.
And be a pest.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And all the other teams will hate him for it.
Exactly, and he'll love it.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Takes me back to a guy who Lon Kruger actually coached at Illinois, and I can't even remember his
yes.
name. Luke.
Yes.
Luke something, bald kid.
Yes.
I don't remember his name, but I remember when they played Kansas in the 2000 NCAA tournament. I think it was his senior year at that point. A kid who he had maybe 3 points, 4 boards a game, starter, but was just a pest. With teammates fed off of his energy. He was always diving for loose balls and just one of those kids that you can't do without. A pulse, like mm-hmm. you said.
The unsung heroes of basketball.
So I think Kruger Kruger likes those.
I got trivia for both of you.
Ooh.
And don't look at your score. Don't look at your score
sorry.
Sheet.
Sorry.
And you have to answer quickly. Okay. Who is the only Rebel to score in double figures in both of their games so far? Quick.
Justin Hawkins?
Yes. Ah. You are sweet. How about Justin Hawkins?
I was going to say there were only two that scored in double figures. It was Belfield and Hawkins. I figured I went for the less obvious choice.
Yeah, it was a trick question. You got it. How about Oscar? Oscar only had 1 point in the opener. He was 0 for 5 from the field, so that's a heck of a way to come back with 22 points.
That's a nice little turnaround.
But how about Jayhawk?
I think he's quickly becoming one of my favorite Rebels to watch. Exactly. That's the thing. He's like such poise so quickly. Mm-hmm. And you played collegiate level basketball, and he just.
His maturity has a lot to do with it, too. And that was noticeable when we saw him come to Vegas and play summer prep ball the last two summers. Yeah.
Well, you know what I asked him? I asked him and Anthony after the game about. Making such an impact so early in their careers, making a difference, getting in the game and actually making a difference, powering a victory. And I kind of posed a question to both of them, that's why you came here, right? And both of them said, we weren't promised anything, but we were promised if we busted our tails in practice, we would earn what we deserved. And Jayhawk said, I didn't come here to sit. I got too much pride for that. So... There's a lot of confidence and just a veteran 2 games into his career. It seems like
I know seriously like it's and he's talking like you were saying earlier like talking like a vet and everything and it's. I mean, I almost feel like a lot of people expected there to be a fall off between the senior laden class of last year and the maturity of that group to how young this team was. I almost feel like the maturity level took a step up. And this it's not a knock against last year's team, but I just feel like this team just has such a sense of poise and confidence in their game.
You can kind of sense that they're a little more on the same page, too.
Yeah, they're all
kind of
picked
that up watching
them
play. This team seems very much more on the same page.
It's reversed. Yeah. They have more dimensions. They're deeper. God, it's like it's night and day.
Well, we talk about the poise, we talk about the maturity they showed. Let's spin it forward, because coming up Saturday night, they got Southern Illinois.
Salukis!
Traditionally, this is a team that wants
to... Salukis bark?
I think so.
They want to force their pace on you, and under Coach Chris Lowry, who's been there a few years now, he's established something there. They are better than just about anybody in the country at forcing their pace on you. They're going to try to keep you in a low-scoring game. They're going to try to beat you up. They're known for some of the roughest practices in the entire country. Do you see this carrying over? I mean, how big was that second half to carrying it over into what's going to be, even though it's at home, physically challenging game?
Well, I got a couple thoughts there real quick, Ryan. I did a piece today advancing today's game just about how poorly UNLV has been shooting. And maybe it wasn't fair, but I went back to their last 7 games. Their opener, their exhibition, 6 games last season. I mean, they shot 41% Saturday night. And in their 6 previous games, they were under 40%. So this, the program really I don't know what it is, but they're just not shooting straight. They're having trouble, connecting. And then what do they do tonight? They come out shooting 35% in the first half. So I think that second half is a huge springboard to good things and confidence and just working so well together too. They were sharing the sugar very well,
especially in a game coming up where they're going to have to value the possessions.
Well, my thought about that is, I think the casual basketball fan who's going to go to the Thomas and Mack Center for the next 2 games had better watch out, because the next two opponents are dangerously, I don't know what the hell what to fill in there, they're but slippers. They're tough.
Yeah.
You know, Holy Cross in Southern Illinois. Maybe they're not so well known to the average fan, but they're
to
tough,
diehard
tough teams.
To diehard basketball fans that love the beginning of March Madness, where it's conference tournament time, and if you watch those conference tournaments, you know who these teams are. Yeah. If you watch the Patriot League and Missouri Valley Conference, like you know that these teams are two of the dominating teams in each of their conferences, and play well on the road too.
Yep.
And I'll never forget when I was covering Kansas, they played Southern Illinois 3 years ago in San Jose in the Sweet 16, and you know, Kansas got this big grand hockey locker room in San Jose, and Southern Illinois was stuck in the, you know, this little closet.
Like, they need any more motivation.
Exactly.
Chairs. And,
was it the pink locker room?
Walked in to talk to this team, and they and you know, these guys are all sitting there, and they just have these looks on their face, and I'm just thinking, wow, this team looks like it belongs in this locker room. Because we're talking about guys that were covered in bruises, cuts, scrapes, and they weren't laughing. They weren't, and, you know, we got them to talk about what their practices are like under Chris Lowry. There's no such thing as out of bounds. The ball is always in play. And I mean, there's guys who get stitched up, put a Band-Aid over it, and they're back in practice. I mean, these guys...
I wish that's how real basketball games were.
These guys play...
Awesome.
These guys
like
play
MMA
a brand
basketball.
Of ball that... Yeah.
These guys it sounds like Izzo's practice with helmets.
Yes!
It's,
yes!
But see, they practice like that, but they don't bust out the football equipment. They practice like that all the time. And
just bare skin.
Yeah, and you can call it dangerous. You can call it whatever you want, but they mean business when they come to play. They're the mean machine, basically.
Right. Well, you know, it looks like UNLV is what did you just say? Coming. What did
the
you
mean
just
machine?
Say?
The mean
no,
machine.
No, before that. Mean business. Wow.
Business,
I'm losing it. I'm hearing those whistles.
Tweet, tweet.
Yeah. UNLV really showed in the second half that, you know, I think they mean business, too, you know, and I think they're very well aware that what's coming up, you know, we've got these two games, and then Louisville, Arizona. I mean, it's on.
There's no easing into this season.
But you know what? It's the Michigan State approach.
Yes.
You play everybody in the non-con. You take your lumps if you have to, but come conference season, you're ready.
Yeah, and then come mid-March, don't cross your fingers and hope you get a bid. You know, have it.
Right.
Jim Boylan was real good about this last season. You know, you want to decide your tournament fate before you get to the league tournament. You know,
agreed.
Have them all kind of, you know, on your side, have that RPI high, and then you can go into your conference tournament, and then you don't have to be so tight and play with so much on the line.
Yeah, you win three of these next four, it's gonna go a long way.
Yes,
basically. Well, any final comments before we let this one go?
No.
Nope. Tweet.
Tweet. Tweet. For Rob Misch and Christine Killemeyer, this is Ryan Green. We'll talk to you next time here in the Rebel Room.